Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
An Erios production.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite. I just need sperm.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Oh. My mom's here. She's going to help me tell you a story.
Go ahead. You start.
Okay. Well, let's see. Last Sunday, I started freaking out about the virus, much like everybody else. I don't know. Everybody kind of had a different time when they started to panic or be very, very concerned. But for me, it was last Sunday or Monday. I didn't talk about it much on the podcast because I wanted to keep that episode with Lauren kind of light for anybody that wanted to not think about the virus. Actually, I want to keep this episode kind of light on the virus too, because honestly, every time I hear about it, I get sick to my stomach. So if you want, skip ahead to the interview. It's at about 10, 50, 11 minutes, and we don't talk too much about it. But anyway, at that point, I was thinking about going home to New York. And I was talking to my mom and dad the whole time, and we were talking about the idea of me driving home.
So the thing is, Molly was definitely going to drive home for my mom's birthday, which is coming up at the end of April. She'll be 100. And that was all going to be fascinating. But now we were down to a situation where she was going to bolt out of L.A. in some car, either rental or her own or whatever, drive across the country and get stuck in Oklahoma, have a National Guard put her in jail, I don't know what, deal with the snowstorms that were happening in the Midwest. How was she going to escape the virus traveling 4,000 miles
away? I had a plan for all of these things. I wasn't going to get stuck. And I wasn't going to catch any viruses. I was going to wear gloves when I pumped gas. I wasn't going to buy any food or drink. And I was going to pee on the side of the road and poop in a bag.
And you were going to sleep in listeners' driveway.
Oh, yes. I was going to ask my listeners if they across the country if they had any driveways that I could pull into so that I could sleep without getting, you know, being worried about murder.
How to lose listeners real fast.
But everybody in my family was upset with me because they were scared, more scared than I was. And eventually I let them convince me that Trump was going to lock down the country and I was going to get stuck in Kansas. No offense to Kansas. I'm sure it's a lovely place. So starting Wednesday last week, I started planning this road trip and thought I would leave by Saturday. But then starting Thursday, everybody was getting real mad at me. And then Friday morning came around and it was like, you're not driving. We want you to stay put. And what you doing?
She seems to be writing on a piece of paper.
I'm just going to write you a note.
You can say things. I could just cut it.
Pick it up.
I decided late Thursday night, fine, I'll fly. I knew somebody that had flown a week before, and she had told me that there was nobody on the planes. And so Friday morning, I booked a flight for first thing Saturday morning, 5:30 a.m.
You were in business class nobody around you.
That's right. Business class. There was 8 people on the plane.
Wrong grammar.
What?
There was 8 people? There were 8 people.
Well, I know. My mom told me to pick it up, so I'm trying to talk fast, and it just doesn't work. Okay, so then, but I was very, 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 very emotional. What was the thing? Oh, okay. Yes. And I'll say it without crying. Every time anybody told me that I shouldn't go home to see my parents, all I could think of was I might not ever see my parents again. As you all know, I love them more than is rational. And I just know none of us know where this is going. It could get worse and worse, and it could get better tomorrow. Likelihood was that it's going to be like this for a bit. And I was going to come home anyway to see Nana for her 100th birthday. And you've been stressing out driving back and forth to Nana's. I don't want you out of the house. I mean,
okay.
I didn't have work.
What you were going through, as of Thursday, Friday, packing everything into all your cans and food goods.
Well, wait, on Thursday night, I packed up for the drive. I packed,
right, exactly.
I had everything by the front door. I even had my banjo. I had three sleeping bags, three tents. I don't know why.
You were told that California was going to shut down and you wouldn't be able to get out of California. So you were going to drive and you were going to do that or find out by midnight.
Oh, and I was going to leave in the morning.
Yeah. Right. But then you decided on the drive, which was a brilliant decision.
No, the flying.
Excuse me. Yeah, you decided to do the fly. So you got that 5:30 a.m. flight. Boom.
Yeah, but then Friday during the day was a crazy day too, because I had to finish editing headshots. I had to.
You had an audition.
I had an audition.
You had to find a rental car. You had to find an Airbnb because your brother convinced you that you absolutely could not stay here in our house.
Well, I wasn't going to stay in their house. We were going to quarantine off a section of the house. We would not see each other. Right. The other option was to stay above the garage in the little studio with no heat and no bathroom, but whatever, I would have done it. But my brother bullied me.
Said that you and I have a way that we find loopholes.
Correct.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that was his belief, and he became terrified that you and I would somehow be physically close.
He became a bully and was very mean to me. But I love him, and I will do whatever. I know it comes from a good place, so I would not want to have a problem with my brother, and I wouldn't want to scare him. So anyway, we all agreed that I find an Airbnb. So we got one. My mom's friend happened to have an Airbnb, and I was so excited. Okay, so then I pack up a box full of provisions. I mail them to myself. I clean my Airbnb in case I can get somebody to quarantine themselves in the Airbnb for a while. As you can imagine, I've lost every single Airbnb guest for the next 6 weeks. So I've lost about $4,000. So it was really important that I clean the place in case anybody wanted to self-quarantine there. So I had to get that done before I left. What else did I do? I don't know. Whatever.
You rented an airplane?
I rented a car. Anyway, it was just a hectic, awful, yucky day. But then went to bed at midnight, woke up at 3 a.m., drove to the airport, left my car at the airport, God knows where.
Did you find anybody yet?
I don't know.
We'll go get it?
Working on it. Okay, there was nobody on my plane. I wore gloves and didn't touch anything. Changed my gloves about 18 different times. I also wore a mask, which I did not remove from my face or even touch the whole entire time. Got to the car, rental place, and asked for the minivan because I assumed the guy told me nobody had rented any minivans for a long time.
That was very good.
Changed my clothes and put them in a plastic bag, desanitized the entire plane.
Somebody gave you an entire can of Lysol.
One of my neighbors.
That's wonderful.
So
you
kind
were able
of
to bent. Spray down the car, huh?
Yeah, sprayed down the car and kissed the rental guy on the lips. And then I got in the car. You called me and told me that the host of the Airbnb that I'm staying at now has a fever. So then I pulled over on the side of the road and messaged three other places on Airbnb, got to my parents' house. We said hello on our telephones from our cars and communicated from 20 feet away from each other. That was fun. And then I got, luckily there was another Airbnb available.
Well, that was with closed windows.
Yes. And then I got a message from Airbnb that this place was open, and it just happens to be about a mile and a half from my parents' house, and it's been vacant for 5 weeks. And I'm here right now talking to my mom on FaceTime, and she's a mile and a half away, and I'm gonna be here for 2 more weeks. I mean, I'm self-quarantined for 2 weeks, but I'm going to be in New York for at least a month.
But I feel so comfortable having you here. And I know that in a crisis that we can help each other.
Wait, if I get sick, you're not allowed to come help me.
Well, let's talk. We'll talk about that when.
No, we won't. No, you're not allowed. I'll be fine. But if you get sick, I'll be right there.
People your age will be admitted to hospitals. Anybody daddy's age will not be admitted to a hospital.
I know.
And I'm very close to, about to be 78. So my numbers are pretty shallow in that direction. So I just as soon be right here and be safe. And I am, and I'm healthy. And I just.
That's what I'm saying. If I get sick, you guys are not coming to take care of me. I'll be fine.
That's right.
You guys.
Most people are fine.
Yes.
And will be fine.
I know. Yep. I'm just glad that I made this decision. I'm so happy I'm here, because being there away from you guys with the fear of not being able to see you ever again, the fear of something happening to you guys and me being over there and cut off from you, I would have lost my mind. Yeah. So I'm just very, 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 very happy I'm here.
I know.
Well, thank you, Mom, for helping me tell that story. And now I'll start the podcast. Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Okay, so Lou.
Yeah.
That's what they call you. Lou is an artist. She lives nearby me. We can't meet in person because we're under quarantine. And also now I'm 3,000 miles away. But she's a listener. And when she saw that I was interviewing an egg donor, she reached out to me to tell me, well, Let's have her explain.
Out to you, because I saw a link about your podcast interviewing an egg donor.
Yeah.
And part of the conversation that we had was about how I use donated eggs and I'm currently about 13 weeks pregnant, and that I was excited to hear your episode because I think you handle discussions of topics around IVF with such sensitivity. And there is so much information, at least in my experience, I just found that so much of the information about egg donation had such a kind of negative association applied to it, or there were so many kind of complicated feelings around egg donation that I knew that you would handle it with grace.
Oh.
And that I was grateful for you interviewing someone and hearing their perspective from hopefully a positive point of view. I haven't heard that.
I know.
I'm sort of in a weird position, but.
So then I told her all about Lauren, last week's guest, and how she was 28, 29, and wanted to become a single mother by choice, did a couple home inseminations that didn't work, and then when she went to go do her IUI, she kind of switched courses and ended up becoming an egg donor. I also told her how I asked Lauren at the end if she would recommend becoming an egg donor to other young women.
She said no, because she had put so much thought into it, and she didn't think that it should be gone into with a, you know, lightheartedly or whatever. But
which I completely agree with.
Yeah,
and that was one thing that I kind of responded with. And that was something that drew us to our clinic, was that they really stressed the importance of interviewing and finding egg donors that had an emotional and personal connection to the experience, that that had clearly considered it deeply. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know, because I'm not there. I'm not seeing the interviews. I can only go off of what our egg donor coordinator said, but that seemed like there was a difference between our clinic and their approach and some other clinics that I looked at, where it didn't seem like they were as rigorous about talking to the donors and getting to know them and their reasons why they were donating.
Yeah. I think we should just start from the top.
Let's see. How do I start my particular? I think like the context for me is that I had some complicated health issues when I was younger. When I was 20, my thyroid was removed because I had some nodules, and that had created all of these kind of problems in my life and in terms of just my physical health. And then when I was in my 20s, I was anorexic and I almost died from anorexia. So it was this whole recovery period with that. So I think I had approached the idea of having children or trying to conceive children with a little bit of kind of anxiety to begin with, because I had had such a complicated relationship to my body. But my husband and I essentially started trying as soon as we were married. And just like I think a lot of people with IVF, it was just month after month of nothing. And the more that the months went on, the more kind of it felt like it was validating my concerns that something was wrong. So we did all the things that you do, you know, and like we did the, what is it, the HSG, and I did acupuncture, and we changed our diets, and we started meeting with doctors as soon as we possibly could. I think at 6 months, I started getting everything assessed. And I think the early sort of results were my AMH was, is it high or low that's bad? I don't even remember.
Low usually, but I think if it's really high, that's bad too.
I think we've gone over AMH before, but basically a low AMH kind of means you have a diminished ovarian reserve or not as many eggs. And a higher AMH means that you've got a lot of eggs. It doesn't say anything about the quality of these eggs, just quantity. But if AMH is super high, then it can indicate polycystic ovarian syndrome. And there's a lot of complications with that. Okay, I can't do the research today because I'm running out of time, but I love you.
Right. So I think it was pretty low. So there was a little bit of just flags. And so I had had a really focused mindset that I knew I was, in my mind, I was like, I think we're just headed for IVF. I didn't really believe month to month like anything else, that anything else was going to happen. I obviously had like moments that would, you know, I sort of get hopeful and we would do another process and hope that would work. And then it wouldn't. Yeah. So I only went through one round of IVF, and that was about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I had a high follicle count. I got, I think I had 17 or 18 follicles, but they only retrieved 13 eggs. Mm. And then of those 13, they only got two, two essentially blastocyst stage. What they described happening is that when the sperm went to fertilize the eggs, my doctor kind of described it as the eggs like fell apart, that they just weren't strong enough to kind of survive the fertilization.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there was just like a general egg quality question. Mm-hmm. The embryologist, I think, explained graininess and that it seemed in general like the eggs just were of a low quality.
Okay.
And then of those two, we sent them out for testing and they were both abnormal.
Ugh.
So it was one of those things where I was sort of thinking about this today and thinking about how it feels when you're going through IVF, like you're going through something like you have incredibly bad luck, right? That it's like, how is it possible that just one after the next of the things keeps happening to me? And I would like look at my friends who were, you know, 35 or 36. I was 37 when we started, or I guess maybe I was 36. I'm 37 now, almost 38. And I would, they would get pregnant the first month of trying. You know?
Yeah.
Some of them were like smokers. They weren't particularly healthy. And it just felt like impossible that they were achieving this and I wasn't achieving this. But then when I kind of like, when we look at everything that happened, the reality is that like we were always in the big percentage category. Like if there was a 30% chance of IVF working, we were in the 70%, right?
Right.
If there was a 20% chance of this like HSG, like helping fertilization the next month, we were in the 80%, you know? So it wasn't like we had terribly bad luck. It just was actually kind of like, we were the norm, you know?
Yeah.
Like we just kept falling in the big percentage.
Yeah.
So I think after that experience, which was really hard to go through because it seemed, we felt so optimistic having 17 follicles.
Yeah.
Having people tell you at 37, like, well, you're really pretty young, you know?
Like you were saying, well, you're really pretty.
No.
You are really pretty though.
Oh, thanks. They didn't tell me that.
You're really pretty, so you must have eggs.
These things shouldn't happen to such a pretty person. No, they did not tell me that. It seemed like it was going to work.
Right.
My sister also went through IVF. The whole time I was sort of anxious about it and wondering if it was going to work. And And she was like, it'll work. It worked for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. There's just like a mental necessity, I think, that people take on in order to get through it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it didn't work. And it felt like everything that I felt about my body was coming true. Like, you know, like all the things that, all the distress that I had in my body, it's like, oh, this just proves that, you know, it's broken. I'm sorry. Yeah. No. It's like some, it's weird to relive it, you know?
Yeah. Shit. I've got a pit in my stomach just thinking about it, about my own experience too. But
yeah,
I just feel for you. And also,
yeah.
Oh, did you hear that noise?
Are yeah, okay? It's my phone. I'm going to fix it.
That's fine.
People are texting me. People.
God, people. It's just virus time. Everybody wants to talk all the time.
I know. Everyone's so social. Like a Marco Polo's rolling in. yeah.
So your brain, you were saying, you know, everything, all your doubts in your body and all that stuff, doing what it's supposed to do, you just didn't trust it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's a part of me that goes, what if I had trusted it? Would it have worked?
Fuck that shit.
Like, I know, which is such a, it's the other trap of IVF is that there's always the thing of like, did I do enough, you know? Or, you know, I had like relatives that would say, you know, you'd be doing every fucking thing. You'd be eating like an insane person, like obsessing over every particular thing. And then you have somebody say, you know, I read this article about fasting, and if you fasted,
my thinking phone's like, ringing. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. See?
Now you again.
Yeah. So I've like had relatives saying like, oh, I read this article about fasting. There's these like clinics you could go to and you could fast, and all these women are getting pregnant after they fast. And it just felt like, oh my God, I've done like everything I can possibly do, and it's still not enough. And now people want me to like starve myself. You know, it just felt like there's no end to what you are supposed to do and like what you're supposed to sacrifice in order to make this happen.
Yeah.
Which just felt so depleting, you know? Yeah.
And then everybody says like, I think I had this conversation with Selena, but like, just trust the universe or whatever.
Totally. And totally.
It was like, well, which is it? Am I in control or are they in control?
I know. Exactly. Yes, I totally identified with them. I remember them talking about that because in the most recent episode with Selena and her husband, whose name I'm forgetting, but talking about maybe it's a, you know, 5% is positive thinking, but probably 95% is other stuff.
Yeah.
And probably of that 95%, it's mostly stuff that you can't control.
Yeah.
That scientists can control, but that you can't particularly control.
Yeah.
So I think after that experience, it was, there was just a whole lot of grieving. And I had, even before the failed IVF, I had been looking at egg donors. I had been sort of browsing.
Yeah.
You know, like looking at different sites. And I would occasionally save someone's profile. And I had brought it up to my husband. I think he was a little more hesitant than I was in the beginning. And I think in his mind, he always thought, well, if we do two failed rounds, then we'll go to an egg donor.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I thought, I don't think I can survive two failed rounds. You know, like, I just don't think I can do it.
Do you think that, is that emotionally or physically or a combo?
Of survival?
Yeah.
I think it's a combo.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a very particular mix of someone who is like highly analytical, but also like crazy emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, somehow I'm able, everything in my life is like head and gut. Like my head's always sort of talking to my gut. My gut's always talking to my head. And so I think I was able, from a rational point of view, to look at my feeling self and to see that I was depleting myself of emotional energy.
Mm.
And I think sort of intellectually, I knew that I didn't have enough in me to keep going through this too many times. So I think the analytical part of my mind was kind of like protecting the emotional part of my mind. In terms of the physical stuff, in a way, I feel like once you start doing it, it just, you almost like surrender.
Yeah.
Surrender to the torture that you're putting yourself through. And it wasn't like I was like walking around thinking about all my bruises, or I think it's more psychological.
Yeah. I like how you put that about your brain protecting your emotional gut.
Another thing that I've found with IVF is that it seems like people don't want to talk about the financial aspect of it.
Me.
I think people are uncomfortable with the idea of money and creating life. And when those two things are side by side, people get like, they just get uncomfortable. It feels like icky to them. And so I think that there's this weird kind of protectionist thing where sometimes, you know, people who are going through IVF, they don't even allow themselves to think about the amount of money that's being spent because it's too painful to process that. And also because they don't want to say, I can't create life because I don't have enough money. Right. Like it feels, I think it makes you feel like if you want to do this, you should be willing to do anything in order to achieve this goal.
Right.
I guess for me, the rational part of my mind also was able to look at our life and make an assessment based on like what happens if we deplete all of our financial resources and we still don't have a positive outcome from IVF with my own eggs. And we want to go to a next step, but we can't afford it.
Yeah.
Or say we go through however many rounds of IVF and then we have enough to, you know, conceive using an egg donor, say, or to pay for adoption. But then we're completely depleted and we're like pregnant and ready to raise a child and we feel completely depleted. And I guess it didn't make sense to me to completely run down all of my emotional reserves, all of our financial reserves.
Yeah.
Then there was this other possibility that was offered and that, you know, we benefit from the development of science to kind of explore this other possibility where that possibility would give us like that big percentage, you know?
Right.
Like we wouldn't be in the little percentage anymore. Exactly. We would be in the like 60 to whatever percent of you, you'll have a baby, you know?
Yeah.
So we just like, it just, to me, like I want to sit in the big percentage and I don't want to have to sit in that percentage after torturing myself and running myself ragged. And I want to have something left to give to my child. I want to feel like I have some part of me,
yeah,
you know, that's present and still has joy, you know?
Yeah.
So... I'm going to have cycles of teariness where I have to like,
you know me, I like it. It all makes sense what you're saying to me. Making the decision to make it happen while you still have money and still have emotional resources makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
A lot of sense.
And I think I know that everyone's going to have a different relationship to the idea of egg donation. I think one of the reasons or one of the things we kind of talked about when I reached out to you was that there's a stigma associated with it that has something to do with the idea of it as a last resort.
Right. And I actually assumed that it was a last resort for you when you
right.
brought it up.
Right. And I think, you know, this is one of these things, too, where I could tell my story and I could be even more specific about, you know, the medicines that we took during IVF and what the embryologist said about the egg and, and the people we talked to afterwards, because we talked to then a number of doctors afterwards. One of them, actually the one that runs the clinic where we got our egg donor or got our egg donation from, he believed that we should try again and that he was going to put me on. He was essentially going to do some sort of a mini stem. And he thought, you know, he could get maybe 6 to 8 eggs. And he thought of those eggs, he might be able to get 1 or 2 that were normal. But we talked to a lot of other doctors and they said, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have done the same protocol. I wouldn't change anything. And I can't tell you if the results would be exactly the same, worse or better. It just could be a different month, like they say, right? Like it just depends on the month.
Yeah.
Which just was like not enough for me, you know? So someone could hear my story and they could be like, oh, but if you just tried one more time or, you know, I know of this person that did this. And I think for me, it was like once I kind of accepted the idea of egg donation, once I kind of allowed myself to imagine that scenario, it didn't feel like a last resort. It actually felt like just a good option.
Yeah.
You know, all the options that we had, we were in this situation where we couldn't conceive naturally. And here are all of our options. We could keep doing this. We could do that. We could do egg donation. And it seemed like a really good option to me.
Yeah.
And I think on top of that, I had a couple of little genetic things. I'm like a gray area with Fragile X. So there's like a percentage chance that I could give my kid, they could be an intermediate, and then they would have.
Later,
maybe, yeah, do one of those bongs because I'm not gonna thing. Yeah,
it makes me want to smoke out of a bong, and I haven't done that in like 10 years.
Yeah, do
just
a
like
bong
right now, like, why bong. Not? You know what, coronavirus, yeah. Let me just like get back all my old habits, just bong it up.
We got time, yeah,
fuck it,
stay indoors and bong it up.
First of all, it's been way more than 10 years, probably like 20 years since I smoked out of a bong. No, maybe like 18. Wow, this is really important. Let me look up Fragile X. Fragile X syndrome causes mild to severe intellectual disability. It affects both males and females, but females usually have milder symptoms. Symptoms include delays in talking, anxiety, and hyperactive behavior. Some people have seizures. Physical features might include large ears, a long face, a prominent jaw. I have a long face and prominent jaw. Anyway, a prominent jaw and forehead. I do not have a big forehead. My forehead is tiny. Anyway, and flat feet.
One of the concerns, if my child was an intermediate carrier for Fragile X, yeah, is that they would have problems conceiving. Uh-huh. And it seemed like, well, that's a terrifying fucking cycle to perpetuate, you know? Right. And then I think too, my relationship to my family, while I have a good relationship to my parents and we have a close family, but I never really felt like I was deeply connected to this idea of like a genetic line. And I think in some ways, because kind of it took me so long to process how I felt about my own body and to try to like regain trust in my own body, I think it sort of pushed me to think about myself and reflect on myself, reflect on my relationship to my parents in a way that it made me realize that parenting, or at least my perception of parenting, a big part of parenting, I think, is working hard to allow your child to be who they are, to give them space to develop in the ways that they want to develop, to feel heard, to feel seen, and to allow them to be, you know, to allow them to define themselves and not to place some definition of upon them based on your own set of expectations.
Yeah.
I kind of think any child kind of comes out a stranger, you know, even if they look like you, you don't really know who that person is or who they'll become.
Absolutely.
I think all of those kinds of realizations were kind of spinning around inside of me when I was first exploring the idea, and they all pushed me in the direction of feeling not resigned to egg donation, but positive to have kind of a positive association with this possibility.
And I'm assuming you also had a drive to be pregnant, to feel pregnancy, experience pregnancy.
Right. Well, I think too, that is connected to my experience with my body that, you know, because I had worked so hard over so many years to try to recover and regain my health and regain a sense of self. And then by the time I was starting to feel like I was really becoming who I was, you know, I was coming into myself in a strange way at age 36 or something, then my body failed me again, you know? And so I really felt like I wanted and personally felt like I needed a positive experience with my body. I needed to go through something where I could prove to myself that my body can do something, you know, that it can be right.
Yeah.
And I know that's not important to everyone, but to me, it was meaningful.
Yeah.
And just maybe mostly in terms of that recovery, but also maybe in terms of the idea of having that time to develop a relationship with my child. I think I wanted that.
Yeah. I guess there's many reasons why somebody would want to be pregnant, but I never thought about that reason before. It's not like mine at all. It's just, I want to experience pregnancy and breastfeeding and childbirth. And yours is a little more thoughtful.
maybe it's different. I didn't think about that. But I think if anything, I feel like I'm always trying to remind myself not to kind of complain about pregnancy symptoms and things like that. I haven't particularly loved the experience of actual pregnancy.
Yeah.
But I have loved the experience of gaining a gradual, very gradual, and also still very tentative trust in what's happening, which is like, you know, a day at a time. And especially now when it feels like everything's so terrifying.
I know. So, I mean, and that's a whole other thing that I want to talk about, but I don't, because I don't want this episode to be about it.
Yeah, I get it. And probably people need some relief from it.
But yeah, but I do want to, I'm sure I, well, let's continue with your story.
Okay. We had our transfer on January 13th. And then there was some uncertainty in the beginning. I had a really low beta in the beginning at 12.
Wow.
And so it took some time to actually believe that I was pregnant. And it seemed like, you know, even the next beta was, it tripled, but it still was like, well, that seems low. And so I think it probably took several weeks for me to actually be able to hold in my mind the possibility that this might work.
Mm-hmm.
And by several weeks, I mean, I think I was legitimately like 6 or 7 weeks in before I started believing that it was happening.
Yeah.
But I was sort of like hiding out during that period of time, like just scared. I didn't know what was going on. So I was just kind of staying at home and like holding my breath.
Yeah.
And then I started getting morning sickness.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like staying at home because I was sick all the time. And then I was going to bed at like 7 at night. So I was not seeing anybody. And then I was like sort of trying to hide the symptoms because I didn't want to tell anybody. So I feel like I've been in quarantine since like the middle of January. Like I didn't do anything or see anybody for months. And then I like finally got out of the first trimester. I'm like, now's when I'm going to start feeling good. And then coronavirus hit. And so it was like, I was like just getting off the couch. And then I'm just like plopped back down on the couch and like surrendered to this existence that it's very familiar to me.
Yeah.
You know, like not leaving my house. But anyway, it is terrifying. I think it's like.
It's great that you've been home pretty much. And I mean, you're probably not sick. You're probably not going to get sick. That's pretty cool.
The scariest thing is the doctor's appointments. Those are the, that's the scary part.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's like still.
Are you kind of done with that for a little while?
I have an NT scan on Tuesday. And I am sort of like every day sort of debating whether I should do it or not. But I think right now we're going to go.
I don't know what NT scan is, but I'll look it up.
Yeah, you could bong.
Bong. Smoke some weed.
A nuchal scan or nuchal translucency scan is a sonographic prenatal screening scan to detect chromosomal abnormalities in a fetus. Since chromosomal abnormalities can result in impaired cardiovascular development, a nuchal translucency scan is used as a screening rather than diagnostic tool for conditions such as Down syndrome, Patau syndrome, and Edwards syndrome, and non-genetic body stalk anomaly. Oh, and that gorgeous humming noise you're hearing is the sound of a very, very loud and inconsistent random heater that goes off and is not conducive to podcast making. But I'm in an Airbnb and I'm warm, so I'm okay with it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We might as well talk about who you picked and how you picked them and how that process went for you. And you can talk about money if you want to, even though I don't want to personally about mine.
I can talk about money. I'll have to just make up numbers that I remember because that's the best that I, because I've forgotten everything. I had been saving profiles for a period of time in sort of anticipation of the idea of possibly using an egg donor.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were simultaneously considering the idea of doing another round of IVF. We were interviewing doctors and sort of gathering research about that. We found a clinic that is called Santa Monica Fertility Clinic. We really loved this clinic. We had a really good experience with them. And it's a shared family program. So essentially with the fresh cycle donors, they will split the eggs between, I think, just two families typically.
Huh. Okay.
I think typically the frozen donors are the eggs that were not utilized in the fresh cycle. So you could have a family that utilized these eggs from the fresh cycle, and then whatever frozen or whatever eggs remained, they would freeze. Does that make
eggs.
Sense?
Yeah. Would they freeze embryos or eggs?
Eggs. So like if they were doing a fresh cycle, maybe two families would get a certain number of eggs.
Mm-hmm.
The one family would fertilize it in their way. The other family would fertilize it in that way. And then maybe the remaining eggs would be frozen.
Okay. For anybody.
And for anybody.
Okay.
So they have donors on the site that are frozen and fresh.
Uh-huh.
Fresh cycle donations tend to have slightly higher success rates than frozen cycle donations because frozen eggs are more fragile than frozen embryos.
Okay. So then how many eggs did you get?
You pay for a particular batch of eggs, and then it comes with a guarantee. If none of the eggs fertilize, then that's it. You're done. You've spent your money and you don't get anything else. No, I think I'm wrong. I'm sorry.
If none of them work, then you get your money back.
You get your money back. Yes. Yes. That's what it is. If you get an embryo, like one embryo,
then you can't get anything back.
You transfer it and it doesn't work. You don't get anything back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get multiple embryos, then you get as many transfers of those embryos.
Yeah.
For free.
Yeah.
Like, well, not free. You're paid for it, but they're covered, right?
Yeah.
So if you had six embryos, you would get six transfers.
Wait, you don't have to pay for the additional transfers?
No, exactly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I think all in, our program was about 24,000.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that would include medications.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's still a ton of money. I don't want it to sound like it's not a lot of money, but compared to other egg donor programs, if you're essentially paying for an entire fresh cycle, it could easily be $50,000 or $60,000.
Right. But also because they're fresh, you're not doing genetic testing. So that's a part of IVF that costs so much. It's like that can be $6,000.
Right. But you could still do genetic testing with the fresh eggs. You just wouldn't do a fresh transfer.
Oh, I see. So you're not, right. I thought you were like getting ready at the same time that she's doing her retrieval. You're getting your body ready for a transfer.
I think you can do it that way if you want to.
Right.
And I forget what is included and what isn't included in the package. Okay. I think some genetic testing actually is included, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
Ours were not genetically tested. So we didn't know if they were normal or not. We didn't have that assurance. So because our egg donor had frozen eggs, she actually had additional eggs that were sort of like a leftover batch that wasn't being claimed because it didn't fit the number that you pay for, the cohort of eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of getting 8 eggs, which is what we paid for, and actually he threw in 2 of those for free, then he gave us an additional 4 that were left over.
Pretty cool.
So we had 12.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And how old was she?
She was 22.
Yeah, wow. So what of hers, what could you see of her? Because like sperm donation, I get to see, and Lauren said this in the last episode, the egg donor. She said, you know, sperm donors, I'm looking at a picture of a guy when he was a baby and 3 years old, and I'm guessing what he might look like as an adult. But these people get to see pictures of me from every stage of my life. And yeah, so what did you get to see of your donor?
We saw pictures of her from every stage of her life. I have like little screenshots of like still, you know, in my gallery of this her as a little girl. So, I mean, it was just sort of, again, it's strange that somewhere out there is this person that I have these little pictures of her as a child. So we saw pictures when she was younger, when she was grown up. We didn't see any pictures of her family, although some programs do allow pictures of like their parents or siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like an extensive kind of questionnaire. So it was sort of like the essay section.
Yeah.
She was genetically screened. So we saw what kinds of, if she had any sort of genetic problems, which she had nothing. She was like 100% clear in terms of being a carrier for anything. mm-hmm. that they tested for.
Any voice stuff?
No voice stuff. Mm. All of them had the question of whether they would be willing to meet a child when the child turns 18, and they could answer yes or no.
Mm-hmm. And yours?
Ours did.
Yeah.
It was really important to us that everything be open, as open as possible. Mm-hmm. If we found a donor that we connected with, in fact, I think we probably would even prefer to have a donor that could meet our child sooner.
Yeah.
We have every intention and plan to raise the child knowing their history. This is just like, it was a part of the process for us that this would be, and our child will likely not look like us because the donor did not look like us.
You just picked them because they were cool.
We picked her because of the way that she seemed to think and write. Like through her writing, I felt like I could tell that she was our kind of person. I really felt like I could relate to her. And there was like a section of her writing, I remember, where she was like describing a movie, like describing her favorite movie. And there was a certain phrase that we were in a restaurant or at a cafe or something when I was like flipping through this, reading this. And I read it to my husband and I was like, doesn't this sound like me? Like, doesn't this sound like exactly what I would say? It just felt so like I understood how her brain worked.
Yeah.
And that to me was just the most important thing.
Yeah.
Especially because we knew that we weren't going to try to hide anything about our child's history. It was really important to us and continues to be important to us that there be no shame involved around this or associated with it. We want to be honest and we want to have an honest relationship with our child. And so it's important, the narrative that we establish with them early on.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways too, I don't know, I was sort of okay with the idea that she might not look exactly like us or particularly like us, because it felt like it wasn't some secret that she had to sort of hold inside or decide to relinquish. I mean, I think there's good and bad to that. That will also be a challenge for her, but.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you earlier about what we were talking about, the episode about the egg donor. You said sometimes people say the stupidest, most like insensitive things to you.
Yeah, I did.
And you just said the word shame when you were talking about your future daughter and her not wanting to have shame. So can you remind me what some of those asinine things that people have said?
Yeah, we had like a really good friend say that I should make sure that my husband never meets the donor so that he doesn't fall in love with her, which was like, it was presented as a joke.
It's awful.
But that one was weird. That one was so weird. And then, my dad, when we got like the first ultrasounds where you could kind of see kind of what she looked like a little bit, like see her profile, his immediate response was, she looks just like you. Just like, it was also a joke, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just coming out of a general discomfort, and that because egg donation is a relatively new procedure, I think like we just looked it up this morning, my husband and I, because we were like, when did this even... I think it said 84 was the first.
Uh-huh.
I think because it's new, it's becoming normalized, but it still is unusual for people. And I think people don't always know how to respond to something different like that. And so they end up making what feels like what they think is a joke.
And like, then I think maybe also people think if I make jokes about this, it'll feel like I'm comfortable with it, or like...
Right. Like they have to somehow alleviate my concerns about it. I don't have concerns about it right now. And also that's my job to process and alleviate, you know.
Yeah. But it probably comes from a place of wanting to relate to you, but just not realizing how.
Totally. And everybody just has their own way of doing that. And I think it just reveals people's tendencies, you know. And then, you know, like we had older family members and relatives saying like, I'm praying for you that this happens in the normal way, or... Ugh. That you don't have to do this thing, you know, like that just couldn't accept the idea of it, or maybe probably also couldn't wrap their heads around what it even meant, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't, they don't understand that our child is related to my husband.
Yeah.
They don't understand that. Sometimes they think they will confuse egg donation with surrogacy.
Right.
And think that I'm not actually pregnant, that somebody else is pregnant.
Wow.
So there's just like a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah.
That I think are all, I don't think there's ill intention behind it, but it is one of those things. And I mentioned this when I first wrote to you too, that when we were first researching egg donation and sort of processing it, there are so many negative articles about egg donation that don't necessarily seem to be written from the perspective of the participants of it. They seem to be written from the perspective of someone looking on the outside.
Are the negative articles more about the young women that are getting paid? Yeah, okay, she's nodding. Yeah. She's nodding.
Yeah. No, I think that's a lot of them. And I don't begrudge anybody for wanting to talk about that and to explore that. And I would never want, obviously, someone to be exploited so that I have a child. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
A lot of the articles too seem to be sort of from the perspective of, if you're willing to do this, then you should adopt. So there's that whole perspective. And I think oftentimes adoption is associated with a kind of like, you know, that you're doing something good for the community, that you're giving a home to a child that doesn't have a home, and that egg donation is essentially selfish. Like, if you can't have a child on your own, then why don't you adopt when there's these other children that need a home?
Yeah, but all childbearing is selfish. So fuck off. Right. Everyone.
Yeah.
Any way you do it is fucked up. So go away. Sorry.
Well, and that was the thing that I think eventually like kind of helped relieve us of all of this anxiety, is that it was like, you could look up anything. Mm. I mean, there's people that just think IVF at all is a is a horrible like corruption of nature or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Or not God's plan. God didn't want you to have kids.
Exactly. There's people that think you shouldn't reproduce for environmental reasons, right? So, like, there's always going to be a perspective. Yeah.
Me, but I'm doing it anyway.
I know. I was on that side, too. I was very convinced by those articles.
Other people shouldn't, but I should.
Yeah.
I should have five kids.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think eventually it's like you have to, maybe just like parenting. I mean, there's every opinion on parenting out there. There's there's an endless sea of judgment once you enter into that. So I think you just have to kind of like relinquish that and make the decision for yourself and trust your own instincts about, you know, about the decision and about your own morality and your own, the thing that is compelling you to do this, and trust that it's good. It's coming from a good place.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like we've covered it.
I hope it was helpful.
Oh my gosh. It's so helpful. Okay. I haven't really gotten into, I mean, I did talking to Selena, but it's her story is a little bit, it's a double donor situation. So I love this. I love hearing it. And I knew you would, I think you're very well spoken, and I knew you would be, because I thought your messages made so much sense. And I just really wanted to hear your perspective. And I really feel like I understand you and myself maybe a little bit more.
Good.
Wow.
And I've done all this with sleepless nights and pregnant during a pandemic. So.
Yeah. See? Phew. Good job.
Yeah. The reason that I reached out to you, I didn't reach out to you saying, hey, would you like to interview
me
on your podcast? But I do think it has been helpful for me to hear from other people that have positive experiences, and my experience is in progress. So, it's still developing and it could all go horribly wrong. Who knows?
I
really was looking, when I was looking at egg donation, I was looking to hear from other people about the specifics of their experience. And I can't say that there were never moments that I would sort of panic and go, oh God, I'm just giving up the chance of like having a baby look like me, or they won't have my DNA or whatever. I definitely have had those moments, but the overwhelming feeling that has come from this is one of like tremendous relief and excitement and joy. And also like being able to go through something after having so much frustration and loss when you have an egg that's 22. And so it's like particularly like that much healthier and stronger.
Yeah.
It's reassuring, you know, it's comforting. It's a comfort.
It just seems so nice and such a relief, and like a weight, just like, you just don't have to think about as much.
Yeah, so. I mean, all this other shit comes up too. And then, like, when we thought it wasn't going to work, I was like, well, this is how cursed I am, that even when I do this, da-da-da. Right. But actually, no, it worked, and we were in the majority percentage, like we have been with everything else. And I think if I was on the fence, or if I was trying to make a decision, and then I heard someone say, look, this works for me, this has been thus far a really powerful, positive experience, I feel a whole lot of warmth and love and appreciation towards our donor.
Yeah.
And when we, I mentioned this too, but when we committed to that donor and I talked to the donor coordinator, she said she was like quietly, because they're not really going to influence you, but she was like quietly hoping this whole time that we would, because she kept being like, this is your donor. Like in her head, gosh. She was like, I know that this donor is right for you.
Oh, that's cool.
So I don't know. I just wanted to, if it could be a comfort to anybody else, then I'm like, I'm happy to talk.
That's great. I love that. And then just a side question, how many embryos did you end up getting from that?
From the 12, we had, isn't this amazing that I can't remember the number? We had five. We had five.
So now you've got some frozen.
We've got four frozen. Fuck, so we have the possibility of having a sibling, which was not even, or a genetically related sibling, full genetically related sibling, which was not even really, you know, we were just hoping to get something with my own eggs to have one.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, even though from 12 to five, I was like, why isn't it six or eight, you know, but that was a comfort too, right?
Yeah.
When you're going through the first transfer and you're going, okay, we have four more. And I just think like, if we cannot torture ourselves, then we should not torture ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Life is so complicated. Parental relationships are so complicated. Just because you're genetically related to a parent does not ensure that you're going to have this magical connection or this magical relationship.
Yeah.
It comes down to parenting. And so if you believe and are committed to the act of parenting, and if you're really excited about being a parent and you know that you're going to love your child, then I just wouldn't worry as much about whatever loss you have through this experience. I just think there's so much gained in terms of joy and possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And I think that will be helpful to anybody that might be out there questioning what their next move is.
Good. It's my pleasure. And if anybody wants to talk personally to me, feel free to like forward them on.
I'll connect you. Yeah. Thank you, Lou.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And have a great day. And I'm so happy that, you know, well, have fun being pregnant.
Okay. Yes.
All right. I'll talk to you
and
soon.
And also my heart is with you with all of this stuff. We've been all following and, you know, I'm with you.
Thank
and like,
you.
I, you know, it always is that thing where it's like when you have a success and then you want this other person to have that too. But also, this is a horrible time to be pregnant. So, you know,
I don't know. I have no idea what's next for me.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know.
But I'm out. This month I'm out for sure.
Well, we're all, but now that allowed you to be near your family. So that's good.
Yeah. I couldn't have gone to see my family 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I was having that like painful miscarriage situation. I would have been losing my mind right now if.
No.
Oh my God. Anyway.
I know. Anyway, we're all rooting for you.
Thank you.
Whenever it happens. So, yeah.
Okay. Have all a wonderful day. Bye.
You
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, everybody, it's 10 p.m. on the East Coast, and I need to get to sleep so I can fight off any viruses that might be hanging around in the air so that I can go and hang out with my parents when I'm done quarantining for 2 weeks. Plus, I'm scared that the couple that owns this Airbnb is going to sleep and they can hear me. And I just know that that loud, angry heater noise could come on at any second, and I want to finish before that happens. So, Lou, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your experience with egg donation so eloquently and so thoughtfully. Patrons, I'm going to thank you next week when I'm not battling fatigue and anxiety and technical issues. But listeners, if you're not a patron yet, go for it. Patreon.com/spermcast. You can subscribe for $2 or more for exclusive content. There's going to be all kinds of things up there soon. I'm going to have so much time on my hands. I keep saying that to myself, but it hasn't happened yet. Oh boy.
Oh, did I mention I got somebody to rent the Airbnb for the next 2 weeks, which is amazing. I changed the title of the listing to Self-Quarantine Respite, and I dropped the price. I cut the price in half, so that'll recoup some of the money I've lost. Anyway, if you hate Patreon, you can Venmo me at Molly-Hawkey. And if you're struggling with fertility stuff and you're isolating and you just need an ear, I do fertility consultations. And I would love to be here for you like you've been here for me for the last 2 years. Oh my gosh, it's coming up on my 2-year anniversary in 1 month. Anyway, if you're interested in having a fertility consultation and you just want to talk, you can email me at spermcast@gmail.com. If you just want to holler at me, say hello, you can email me at spermcast@gmail.com. You can leave a voicemail or text me at 323-741-1818. You can follow me and DM me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at spermcast. Also, don't forget, if you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review. And please be safe out there. Okay, I love you. Goodbye.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need Spermcast.
An Earios production.
Powered by Acast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.